Andrew Corliss has been placed on injured reserve, designated for return, and the status of wide receiver Davante Adams is up in the air for Sunday with an injured ankle. So who will Aaron Rodgers throw the ball to against the San Francisco 49ers? We'll break down the receiving personnel with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog for his monthly engagement coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game against the San Francisco 49ers. And to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us as he does the first Friday of every month on the show. Scott, how you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you doing, man?
Very good. We're glad to have you on, as always. We got a big game coming up this weekend. Packers are currently 3-0, and there's some questions about the receivers, especially with Andrew Corliss, as I mentioned earlier, on injured reserve, Davante Adams dealing with his ankle injury. So we're going to break down several of the Packers receiving options they have and the personnel they'll be going with against the 49ers this weekend. So, Scott, let me start out by question. Andrew Corliss has been placed on injured reserve. Before we get into the tight ends that are still there, what's the impact of this loss? What are the Packers losing in Corliss?
You know, it's interesting because he hasn't been used as I thought that he might be used this year. He's been used more of an inline blocker. He hasn't been targeted as much as I thought he might be. I thought that he might be a dependable guy here for Rodgers to lean on after the Nelson loss, a guy that, you know, Rodgers has truly trusted in big situations over the last year or so. And a guy that Rodgers has won a Super Bowl with previously, but he hasn't been used as much as a receiver this year as one might have expected. So where I think that they're really going to miss him is as an inline blocker. And you look at, you know, not to dive in immediately to the other people that we got, but while Richard Rodgers has become a phenomenal pass catcher, you know, and he might arguably have the best hands in the team, he's still a work in progress with respect to his blocking. And Backman doesn't appear to be a fierce blocker either from what we saw during the preseason. So, you know, when I look at Corliss and the biggest impact he's had thus far in the season, it was really when he sprung Starks loose in the 35-yard run against Seattle as a momentum-changing play. So I'm going to be interested to see how the Packers line up on that second and 10 play or first and 10 play where they truly are going to try to run at the heart of the defense and to see where they're lining either, you know, Backman or Rodgers up in that type of situation, trying to run the football.
That's a really good point about Corliss springing Starks there and the kind of analysis we need on this show. So thank you for providing that. But, we got in, you know, initially here about Richard Rodgers. What's your confidence level in him? Because I don't think a lot of people would disagree with me by saying he's been a solid starter so far, but it's not like he's been playing at a Pro Bowl level. So where are you at with Richard Rodgers?
I couldn't be more happy with his development as a receiver. And frankly, what he's really provided us is a red zone threat that if they would have used him maybe last year in the NFC Championship, things might have been a little different there in the first half. But, you look at Rodgers is going to Richard Rodgers in big situations inside the red zone. And, you know, in my blog, I've wrote often occasions that, you know, Rodgers will catch a minimum of 6 touchdowns this year, and it wouldn't shock me if he catches as many as 10. And he's a big body. He really understands how to block, to box out and to spread his arms wide. And then he's got a great web that he offers, the MVP. So I'm really excited as to the target that he's provided, and he's almost contrarian to JerMichael Finley, where, 60% of the passes that hit Finley's hands, it seemed, might have been caught, right? Where anything that hits Richard Rodgers' hands, the ball is not hitting the turf. So I've been very excited with him as a pass receiver. What he hasn't offered, though, is that the true tenacity from a blocking perspective, with the exception of maybe the play that got Wright kicked out with in Seattle. So, I wish we'd see more of that fight from him as and willingness from a blocking perspective. And that piece is really the biggest concern for me with regards to losing Corliss. A sidebar, if I may here, and I look at this whole decision to put Corliss on the designated return list, and I'm a big supporter of it. I almost was surprised that they didn't give a wink wink IR designation to Dmitri Goodson as well to try and get Perreault off the practice squad to try and create a roster spot there, so that they could have Perreault be this inline blocker, where it seems like he might be the best of the bunch that we've got on the roster right now, to be able to come in and fill that need. And additionally, Perreault as well was, prior to getting that concussion against New England, I believe it was, he looked like he was really a true student to the offense. He looked like he knew the plays. Tolzien certainly trusted him. He went up and absorbed contact and held on to the football and really looked like he was a developmental guy and might be able to offer some of the things that Tom Crabtree offered to the Packers during the Super Bowl run, which is oftentimes an overlooked and understated piece of the puzzle. Is, when Crabtree came in, he was almost like an extra offensive lineman on the field. So, with the in the short yardage situations, losing Corliss is a big thing. I'd expect to see a J.C. Treader maybe jumping in a little bit and operating as an extra tackle. But, we did that a little bit last year, and we only saw moderate success there. So just it'll be interesting to see what types of tricks McCarthy has up his sleeves when they're trying to draw up new formations.
All right. So the guy now that leaps into the number two tight end role is rookie Kennard Backman. And he, of course, has been on the 53-man roster, but has been on the inactive list for each of the first three games. So he hasn't played at all. How much playing time do you think Kennard Backman will see? And you could kind of take that as being, how much will Richard Rodgers play as well?
I think Richard Rodgers is going to see the majority of the snaps. The biggest thing with Kennard Backman, it really goes down to the trust factor that Aaron Rodgers has. Aaron Rodgers is such a scholar, a true student of the game, and his intolerance for intellectual mistakes is at just peak levels. And we've seen that with Jeff Janis, and which we can touch on later. So it'll be interesting to see and to gauge how much he trusts Backman. It's gone pretty public with when Rodgers had his radio show on ESPN Milwaukee, where he would talk oftentimes about how everything begins in the classroom. Well, throughout training camp, it wasn't widely reported as to what type of student Backman was. We did read that. His play didn't overwhelm with excitement in training camp. But then when the lights were on, Backman played pretty well in the last two preseason games and made a couple of really nice plays. So, it's really hard to make an assessment as to, or a guess as to how much, Backman will play, just because we don't know what Rodgers thinks of him. And I think that carries a lot of weight. With that said, I would be surprised if there weren't a couple of formations that maybe offered a double tight end look at some point somewhere throughout this season, similar to the way that we used Tremor and Keith Jackson in the mid-90s, where you have Backman trying to get deep down the seam and using his speed and his size, and what he did showed decent hands trying to stretch the field in the preseason at times. And then having Richard Rodgers as the guy that sort of sits down and is the drop-down target for Aaron Rodgers. So that could be something we see eventually. I would be surprised if Backman sees more than a couple of downs here, this Sunday, unless he's proven to be a better blocker than maybe what I'm giving him credit for.
Yeah, if we're just talking about the 49ers game, we saw this last week on offense where the Packers kind of got Alonzo Harris and Aaron Ripkowski involved for like one series. Could be something like that where they get Backman involved, kind of just get his feet wet and then kind of grow his role as the season goes on, as they seem to do with so many rookies. If we move our discussion here from the tight ends to the wide receivers, Devontae Adams kind of dealing with this ankle injury. Again, we'll get into the other wide receivers in a moment, but Scott, do you think the Packers erred in allowing Devontae Adams to play last week?
Yeah, that's a tricky question, because on the one hand, I just feel like Devontae Adams has earned so much street cred inside that locker room. First of all, gutting it out against Richard Sherman, and there was one play where he was down on a broken play where Rodgers was rolling to his right and Adams got beyond Sherman and Sherman grabbed him. I don't know how there wasn't a call on the play, because Rodgers was clearly looking to throw to him. Mm-hmm. And Adams did have a step as he was hobbling and just gutting it out. And that's really the type of thing that it exudes good things throughout the locker room and really shows the fight that I think exists inside on the sideline of the Green Bay Packers this year, which might lead to special things for this team. So on the one hand, I applaud them I applaud Adams for convincing the training staff to allow him to give it a go. With that said, now that we've seen what happened, I hope that they just put him on the shelf if not just this week, maybe, the following 2 weeks, so that he has the bye after that. And hopefully we can come in ripe and ready to temper, for a big Sunday night game. And I think that now you really have to take the long-term health of the season into consideration and not let this thing be a real lingering injury for Adams, because it's a requirement. If the Packers are going to make a big run this year, it's a requirement to have Adams, lining up out wide.
Yeah, I don't know how to react to the injury last week. In hindsight, it probably wasn't the right move. I mean, did it seem like he was healthy? We're not there at the facility watching him work out each week. But I think going forward, you got to make sure his health is in the forefront of your mind. The guys who are replacing him are going to be there without, whether Adams is in the lineup or not. Does Randall Cobb become even more important than ever with not only Adams out, but Jordy Nelson, of course, out for the season? Does Randall Cobb become more important?
He absolutely does. First of all, how great is Randall Cobb been this year, man? Like, unbelievable. And just truly in lockstep from a mental perspective with Aaron Rodgers. It's just the way that they're communicating, it seems like they've always communicated very well, when plays break down. But just at this stage, he looks better than ever and so elusive after that first or after the catch, just making the first guy miss, it seems like, more than not. And I haven't seen any statistics, and I'd be interested to see yards after the catch this year, with regards to Randall Cobb this year. But he's catching a lot of 8 to 10 yard hitches, and he's turning those things into 15 to 30 yard gains, and it's been really a great weapon to have on the team. And without a doubt, Cobb just becomes even more important here. And it's a good thing that Cobb and Rodgers are in absolute unison with one another at this stage.
So with the other guy, James Jones, he's been more than anybody expected this season. I think, there was hopeful that he would contribute, and he's gone above and beyond with four touchdowns this year. That's already second in the NFL in receiving touchdowns. Is amazing. Does his role expand even more with the possibility that Adams may not play?
I don't even know how that would be possible. I mean, I mean, I have to admit that I was skeptical about even signing him. And I'm not afraid to say that. You pound your chest and you're right, and you you stand up when you're wrong. And I was surprised in some ways that they brought him in. I wasn't sure that he could separate anymore. He sure caught a lot of balls yesterday or last year, but didn't have much yardage and didn't have much impact after the catch. And he has shocked me as to how well he's played. He might be playing his best football of his career right now. And it's coming at a time when the Packers might need it most. The thing about James Jones is, you know, Rodgers has such a unique way of just inspiring confidence in people. And Jones just seems to be walking with confidence right now. And it's exciting. I hope he can really sustain this. I don't know if this is the type of level that can be carried on for 16 weeks, but he sure come out guns blazing. And without him, we would not be 3-0 right now. That's for sure.
Just breaking news here. The live edition of this show was competing head-to-head with Mike McCarthy's press conference, and I just took a peek, and the word on Davante Adams is that there's only a slight chance that he'll play. That coming from Mike McCarthy, according to my Twitter feed. So doesn't look like he'll play. Maybe he's in that doubtful category when they release the injury report. We'll see. But just to give you an update. All right, Scott, how about Ty Montgomery, the rookie? Is it only a matter of time until he really emerges, or do you think he'll kind of remain in this limited role?
I could not be more excited about what Ty Montgomery is doing for this team. The effort that he is giving from a blocking perspective, I wrote this in my blog last week, that if the Packers season turns out to be something truly special, you can turn back to that fourth quarter drive when, you know, they truly went with four wide and a tight end, and they just dissected the Seahawks defense. And really what were the big plays were coming from Ty Montgomery, who was attacking Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman from both a blocking perspective. Mm-hmm. And when he caught the ball, he ran right at Sherman. He bounced off Sherman, gave the 360 spin move, collided into Wagner, and then carried on for an additional 12 yards. And but the effort from a blocking perspective, coming all the way across the field on one play, and that was a little down and out to Cobb for, I think it was going to be about a 7-yard gain, and he went and drove Sherman out of bounds and allowed Cobb to be able to pick up the first down. So clearly, you could see last week that there's also a growing level of confidence between Rodgers and Montgomery. When on Montgomery's touchdown, where, you know, Montgomery didn't even look like he knew what the play was, Rodgers rolled to his left, and he was looking at to Montgomery as a legitimate target on the play. So there's a mental combination there that I think is occurring, and there seems to be some good unison there between those two players as well, where you can go back to training camp and think back as to what we were reading, what we were hearing about Montgomery, and he was just a student of the game. And one other thing that I'd like to point out, that I didn't get to give a deep dive into dissecting the Kansas City game yet, but there was one shot that the camera zoomed in, and the Packers were in the huddle about to start a drive. I believe they were up 7-0 shortly after the Montgomery touchdown. And they zoomed in to Aaron Rodgers, and he was looking over at Montgomery, and Montgomery just had this real serious face. And, you know, it would have been great to be a fly in that huddle to hear what Rodgers said to him. But he made one remark that had Montgomery just bursting out in laughter for a quick second. And then he went back. If you have the game on DVR, give a look, because that's the type of thing that I think really brings in-game camaraderie. And it's oftentimes, again, an overlooked thing about what is a team. And it's pieces of it's bits and pieces of information like that I think really translates into developing trust and developing a relationship, which ultimately would then to give a one-line answer to your question, when I've been long-winded, Yes, I think Ty Montgomery is going to have an expanded role, and I think he's going to be a guy that will consistently catch 4 to 6 balls a game.
Yeah, I thought you brought up a real good point about how physical he was with Richard Sherman in that Seahawks game. And if I remember correctly, too, it's not just the passes he caught. He also drew 2 penalties on Sherman, I believe, as well. One a holding and one a pass interference. It's now been almost 2 weeks now. But really great to see that from a rookie. The last wide receiver talk about here, the Packers finally got Jeff Janis involved on offense for really the first time in his career last week. Didn't go all that well, but do you think is this the beginning of more to come?
Oh, man. It's just, did Aaron Rodgers look frustrated or what? Like, it's, and it was kind of cool where he went to Janis on the first play, and had him in man coverage, and it looked like Janis might have had a step. And then to my eye, and again, I haven't given a deep second look at the game, but to my eye, it looked as though Janis ran his route to the sideline. So Rodgers kind of appeared maybe to be jumpy happy at first when he saw that Janis had a step, and then he ran he didn't take his route up the field. It didn't appear. It appeared that he ran to the sideline and didn't give Aaron much of a shot to connect with him. And, so Rodgers sure wears his emotions on his sleeve, so he clearly showed that. And, you know, I think we saw last week some of the stuff that, really frustrates Aaron Rodgers as far as being able to trust Janis on the field. And here, us as fans, it's easy to fall in love with him as the darling during preseason because he's become such a threat when he's going against second and third string cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the Packers need to find ways to get him involved. At some point, we're going to need that big, deep ball over the top.
Yeah.
And I think Janis offers that better than anybody else on the roster. And I think that they do all these plays where they have trips right. And, you oftentimes they'll either have Cobb or Montgomery who's tight to the formation. And you find Jones will be spread wide right. I would love to see Janis getting a free release, probably against a fifth or a sixth defensive back in that type of formation, lined up between either Montgomery and Cobb and Jones, where you'd be expecting Janis to be the blocker there. You'd get a free release, and he'd be going against likely a fifth or sixth defensive back, and I think you could easily get him over the top on a deep ball. So I really think as the season progresses, if Packer fans are patient and they allow it to happen, we're gonna see Janis being able to get deep over the top, and we're gonna find Rodgers developing a trust on certain formations and in certain plays to where we'll see Janis making a big play or two this year when the Packers need it the most. And I just think it's gonna take patience from Aaron Rodgers and Janis himself. But I would like to make one other comment with regard to Janis. What a great treat it's been to see him give effort on special teams. And it feels like he's going to block a punt at some point this year. He's been great as a gunner. He's been really good in, as far as getting in and driving the on kickoff returns, driving the returner up the field. Now, we haven't always made the tackle, but I think Janis has done his job. And, he's really, he's giving great effort, and he's showing that he's a team player and the type of guy that we oftentimes see Ted Thompson draft when he says he's drafting football players. Janis has really done so well on special teams and truly made an impact there.
Yeah, I think your analysis is spot on with Jeff Janis, and hopefully, the mistakes that he had, that also included a penalty last week as well, hopefully they're learning experiences, and he gets better from here, and maybe this is a sign of things to come, that they're getting him involved in at least some small way, which would be nice, I think. Scott, your prediction for the game here before we let you go?
I think that this is going to be a huge victory in the feather of the Green Bay Packers. There's demons that still exist inside this locker room, I feel. One of them they got over by being able to beat the Seahawks. The other one is taking down Colin Kaepernick. San Francisco is not the team that we've seen past years.
Yeah.
But we Colin Kaepernick is. I think they might be a better home team than they are going to be on the road this year. And Carlos Hyde will absolutely offer some challenges and is going to force our defensive line to continue to play the way they've played over the last couple of weeks. And I really hope that the Packers use Clay Matthews to truly be a shadow of Colin Kaepernick, even if that makes him feel like a caged lion. I really think that taking Kaepernick's read option away is going to be the most important piece of this game. The Packers are going to score points. There's no doubt in my mind. And I do think I have a final score prediction of Green Bay 34 and San Francisco 23.
Okay, I'm pretty close to that. They'll get my prediction in a moment here. But I do want to get just one more brief prediction out of you before you go, because we speak to you the first Friday of every month, so we'll be speaking to you in early November. Are the Packers still undefeated by the next time we talk to you?
You know, I got to say, it's really, really comical, because last time you had me on and I said 11-5, gun to head, and it wouldn't even shock me if I said they ended up 10-6 playing really good football, because I was afraid of potential injuries to inside linebacker, and
yeah.
I wasn't sure how well we were at the how good we'd be playing on at the perimeter at cornerback. At this stage, you have to look at the roster, and we got through a tough spot there.
Yeah.
And we got through a tough spot playing great football. We're 3-0. Huge credit to the crowd at Lambeau Field, which really gave a 1990s vibe and made it a real difficult place to play. Loved seeing the fans standing up on second downs in the third quarter, when that used to be a quiet time in the stadium for a little while. With that said, I'm really looking at the schedule, and I think we're going to head into a Sunday night game against Denver, undefeated at 6-0. And that'll be a real festive environment, because Denver could certainly be looking at an undefeated, as an undefeated team as well. So at this stage, yes, I think we head into November as undefeated. And since I will be at that game, I think we talk the week after that. I believe that's a November 1st game. So since I'll be at that game, I'm going to try to bring enough energy to where maybe I'll help us in some play. And yeah, 7-0 when we talk next, Brian.
Very good. You're our 12th man. So sounds good, Scott. As always, thanks for talking to you. And we'll talk to you again after that Denver Broncos game.
Cheers, man. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. Scott McKenna joining us as he does the first Friday of every month here at Railbird Central. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
Some other news that we haven't yet gotten to. Suspended defensive lineman LaTroy Guyon returned to practice for the first time in the regular season this week. So he took part in practice on Wednesday, took part in practice on Thursday, and the word is he's at least healthy. And that was kind of a question, because he was kind of dinged up there during training camp a little bit, although he did come back late. But anyway, just, you know, perhaps there's a little bit of he's suspended, and you always think, oh, suspension bad. Well, maybe it's not so bad in that he's kind of fresh now. He just got 3 weeks off, where the rest of the guys on the team have been grinding, and maybe that's a good thing, as the Packers could certainly use his services. It looked like they really would have needed his services after week one of the season, in the, you know, stuffing the run in the run game, and after Matt Forte and the Bears gained 189 rushing yards. Well, the Packers have really stepped it up against Marshawn Lynch and Jamaal Charles in back-to-back weeks, and now they get Guyon back, and I think that can only help this team. So that's good that he's been back, and all indications are that LaTroy Guyon will play this week. I can't imagine him not, especially with so many, you know, injuries elsewhere on the roster. Looks like he'll be active. But if we get into a little bit of a game prediction here from myself, I got to echo the sentiments of Scott McKenna, and that I think, you know, kind of the big thing in this, you're watching in this game, is Colin Kaepernick, because he's the guy who, if you want to know the history of what the San Francisco 49ers have done to the Packers over the past few years, and Colin Kaepernick in particular. I wrote a rather in-depth article at 24/7 Sports. You can just look through the archives and the discussion about stopping him, because back-to-back seasons in 2012 and 2013 were bookended by losses to the San Francisco 49ers in both the season opener and losses in the playoffs. And that very first meeting in 2012, the season opener, Colin Kaepernick didn't start. I think he played actually late in the game or as a backup. I'm not even sure if an injury happened or whatever. But then, you know, three straight appearances after that, the 2012 playoffs, 2013 season opener, 2013 playoffs, Colin Kaepernick was the poison for the Packers, including the playoff loss in 2012 when he just kind of emerged onto the scene, ran for 181 yards, an NFL record, single game record for a quarterback rushing performance that was really a stab to the heart if you're a Packers fan. And the whole entire offseason was about how did the Packers stop the read option. And then the next year, so they lose in the playoffs. They begin the next year, and Colin Kaepernick doesn't do anything on the ground, but he beats them for over 400 yards through the air, throws three touchdowns, zero interceptions, just kills them a different way in that game. He's had our number. He's had the Green Bay Packers number. And the Packers, I think, you know, are going to be out for a little bit of revenge to an extent. And I think they get it, because while Colin Kaepernick is definitely an athlete of the highest quality, I don't think the team is as good as it was those past few seasons. And I think the Packers will come out on top here. The score prediction, I got Packers 32, 49ers 21. So an 11-point victory, margin of victory here. As the Packers go on the road to face this 49ers team in a game they can't, even though the 49ers currently have a losing 1-2 record, it's a game that the Packers can't afford to overlook and just chalk up as a W because of what's happened in the past. And that would be dangerous. Continuing on here briefly.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday, the team is leaving 2 days ahead of time, kind of an atypical schedule. Usually, if the Packers are playing a road game, they travel the day before the game. So, you know, if they play on a Sunday, they usually fly out on a Saturday. But a couple factors have you know, come to a confluence here. And impacted that decision to fly out 2 days ahead of time. One, that they're coming off they're working on short rest coming off the Monday night football game. And I think they want a little extra time for the bodies to get acclimated for, you know, what is, you know, they're crossing two time zones. It's kind of an extra long trip all the way out to the West Coast. You know, one of the longest trips of the season, at least. They just want their bodies to get right in time for a game on the West Coast. That's a late kickoff, not night, but the late afternoon game. So that's the reasoning here, more or less, about why the Packers are doing that. So leaving today, leaving on Friday, and on top of that, kind of the team releases their final injury report of the week. And we've already talked a lot about Davante Adams earlier in the show, but if there's one more player whose status you're really interested in, it's safety Morgan Burnett, who, you know, Mike McCarthy kind of continues to say he's getting better. I don't know what his status is going to be for the game. So, that's why I'm interested in finding out Friday's injury report, that they include those game day status projections, probable, questionable, doubtful, or out. We'll see that later today and maybe get a better grip on where Morgan Burnett is. I have a feeling he'll be in that questionable category, and we'll probably be taking this almost, up to game time. Whether he'll play or not. But I thought the Packers safeties did an admirable job last week. You know, last week they had Sean Richardson out as well. And, you know, not only Micah Hyde played safety, but then Chris Banjo came into the game and did good, you know, for really that may have been Chris Banjo's first, you know, playing time with the starters in his history. It's not like as if, I mean, he's in his third season, he's played before, but I mean, it's almost like all the playing time you see is either on special teams or you see him in the preseason, he's playing with the third string. This is really the first time Chris Banjo played with the starters and held up well as you could expect for a guy who you don't really expect to play. So kudos to him for playing well. And if they have to go that route, hopefully he continues up at least that solid string of play where you're not worried about him at least. So kudos, Chris Banjo. You're doing a good job. You probably don't have a whole lot of people elsewhere telling you that except on the Railbird Central podcast. So kudos, Chris Banjo. We're big fans on the Railbird Central podcast. But that'll do it for today's show. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Friday. New shows every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Railbird Central, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition, podcasted and on demand later in the day. Thanks to Scott McKenna for joining us today. And we'll talk to you again after the game on Monday morning, giving you a recap of the contest. My call to action, if you've not done so already, please, please, if you would, give us a rating on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. This podcast is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall, nothing like that. So if you could give us a rating on iTunes, it's kind of the best way, I think, to get word out about the show, and we appreciate it. Not that there aren't other ways. If you want to give us a tweet, a shout out on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, we'd appreciate that too. But we'll see you later, folks. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend. I leave you today with a song called Words by Umphreys McGee on Psi Fidelity Records. See you, everyone. Go Pack, go.